Look at the sensible world and use your mind. It is literally Luke Skywalker in the end of the last film who, after he'd been trained in how to use the Force, he had to use the visor because you're not supposed to trust your senses. He had to stop thinking because that messes you up in feeling the Force flow. What did he do? What are the three things he did at the end of the last movie to do the pinpoint bombing on the spaceship? He stopped thinking, stopped using his senses, he turned off the computer, and he felt the Force flow. Most beautiful portrayal of this view I think ever put on the screen. Just feel the Force flow. Your mind will mess you up, your senses will mess you up. See, that's Aristotle. You look at the sensible world and use your mind and abstract from it. That's the problem. That's a Western Aristotelian way of thinking, and that'll mess you up every time. What you need is an Eastern intuitive mystical way of thinking. That's where we are in our culture right now, moving into that more and more. The goal, to become one with the One. We came out of the One, just as the radii came out of the center of the circle, just as the rays came from the sun, and we must return to the One. First, we must become one with our minds, our own minds. Then we become one with the source of our mind, nous. The supermind. Then we become one with the source of mind, the One. There we're beyond all duality, all knowing, beyond all consciousness. There we're in a state of transcendent rapture. How can you know you're there? Well, that's a problem for his system. Now, his answer to that would be, on two or three occasions during his life, Plotinus is said to have reached this stage, and Porphyry testifies that he saw Plotinus levitate off the ground on two or three occasions, that when he was in this state of transcendent rapture, his body levitated off the ground. How did Plotinus know he was in it? How long did it last? According to the Plotinians, it only lasts for about 5 or 10 minutes. How do you know you were in it? Because you know you were conscious up, you know you were getting closer. And you know your asceticism was working, your mysticism was working, you become one with your own mind, you became one with mind, you were trying to penetrate that barrier beyond mind, say this room is mine, and you rushed toward it, you bounced off of it and back into reality, you rushed toward it, you keep bouncing off, and one day you got the thing down, so you rushed toward it and you shot through. And there was no consciousness at all. But 10 minutes later, you came back into reality and you were conscious. And all you know is, boy, that was indescribable. How do you say, how was that? Like, I can't tell you. It's beyond description. It's beyond thinking. You know, it was a state of total bliss. And you know you're conscious now. You were conscious before you hit the wall. And you were conscious after you came back in. But for that 10 minutes, you were totally transcendent bliss. That's
why did he explain that you ever came back? I mean, why... Once you broke through, didn't you just remain there?
Well, ultimately you do. Ultimately you do. At death, when you don't reincarnate. He also believed in reincarnation. And these levitations are just little foretaste of glory divine, to use Christian terminology, a little earnest of the Holy Spirit. They're just little, Mount of Transfiguration. You see Jesus, but that's not it. You know, it's going to go off, and then later you'll see him face to face.
Did he claim to be Christian? I
mean, no.
Okay.
Oh, no.
I noticed his connection with Origen.
Origen? No, they just happened to be students together of the same Neoplatonist teacher. Mm-hmm. All right. Any question about Plotinus's mystical epistemology?
We would want an answer to the question. Been asking, you know, why didn't he stay in this mystical state, et cetera, et cetera. Would it not be more important for him and those like him to get to the point where the questions did not matter? I mean, is that not part of the goal that they're after?
I mean, the
very fact that we're asking the question shows we're coming from an entire...
Oh, yeah, sure, and they would say that. That's why you need koans used on you.
Yes.
You need koans to show you that all your questions are rational questions. You want to know what it was like when you weren't knowing. You want to carry reason over the other side of the wall with you. Leave reason here. Reason is a lower level stuff. Use Francis Schaeffer's thing, you know, an escape from reason. That's the whole point. Schaeffer generally intuited, by the way. Schaeffer was almost always right in his general intuitions about the culture and where we're going, and almost always wrong when he pinned it on somebody. Like he was wrong in his interpretation of Hegel and Kierkegaard and Aquinas. But he was right that we've got this sound barrier here, and we've got people creating this upper story where reason doesn't apply. And thank God that there was someone like Schaeffer who was calling us back to reason, you know, and our escape from reason, because the irrationality of modern existentialism and mysticism that goes beyond reason, you're beyond any place you can know, test for truth, and know right from wrong. And it's a very dangerous kind of epistemology. Okay, religious language, C. The one is known only negatively. Even one is a negative concept. It means not many. The one is even not being, but beyond being. It is named from its sequence, extrinsically. The one is called many things, called the super good, for example. But these names come only from its effects. He who made being has no need of being. He who made many is not many. He who gave rise to multiplicity is absolute simplicity. The cause doesn't resemble the effect. The many don't resemble the one. Duality doesn't resemble unity. Your problem is you're trying to take knowledge, which is dual, true or false, and apply it to what is not dual, true or false. God is neither true nor false. Who is the famous contemporary mystic Alan Watts? Have you ever read any of Alan Watts' stuff? He's a perfect example of this. He was, an Episcopal priest who studied Zen Buddhism and became more of a Zen Buddhist. He says he combined Zen Buddhism and Christianity, but in the final analysis, he comes out on their side on this, and he believes that the same thing. Somebody pressed him once and said, why, if God is this ultimate one, beyond being, beyond truth and falsehood, then... aren't you making true statements about God? Aren't you saying this is true, that that's the way God is, and isn't the opposite of truth falsehood, and aren't you back to dualistic thinking? And Watts said, I don't claim that I'm making any true statements at all. And I'm not making truth claims about God. That would be a consistent way to get out of it. He was saying, I'm not saying this is true. And the logical question was, as someone asked him, why do you write books? Isn't your book claiming that you've discovered truth and you're sharing it with others to try and get them to discover the truth too? And he said, birds fly and authors write, was his answer. That's what authors do. Authors write books and birds fly. I'm not claiming it's true. Of course, if that's the case, then we're in a different marketplace. I'm in the marketplace for truth. If you're not claiming it's true, if you had told me in the introduction, I wouldn't have bought it, wouldn't have read it. But for all the world, it's strange that mystics who say you cannot describe God write 600-page books to tell you that you can't describe God. For all the world, that seems inconsistent. What are you describing, then? If you can't describe your experience with God, if you can't describe the God of your experience, then what are you describing? Okay, any question about Plotinus?
It's the whole principle of self-defeating statement of that. But one person pointed out to me this semester that suppose somebody came and said, you know, this person did not believe in, the principle of self-contradiction, mm-hmm. self-defeating is that valid. And the example was, suppose somebody tells you English is the only language in the world, and whatever you say to him, if you say English in English, that's self-defeating. If you say something German, he says that's nonsense. So there's no way to convince this guy that English is not the only language in the world. Now, the example, of course, we claim that this is not like that, but how can I respond to an objection like this?
By pointing out that this is not like that. It is not inconsistent. It is not self-defeating to claim English is the only language in the world. It might be. So there's nothing self-defeating about it, but it is self-defeating to say, I cannot speak a word in English.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is the self-defeating part is for somebody that tries to object to this person.
Doesn't matter. I mean, the de facto situation, suppose there was a world where there's only one language, English. Does that mean that English is the only possible language in the world? No, just means it's the only actual language, and therefore actually anybody's going to speak is going to have to speak in English. That's one thing to say that English is the only possible, is the only actual language. It's quite another thing to say English is the only possible language in the world. And it's quite one thing to say to a world that only speaks English, you can only speak in English. That's quite one thing. That's a de facto situation because that's the only language to speak in. It's quite another thing and self-defeating to say, I cannot speak a word in English while I use English to speak it.
Suppose I say to you, English is the only language in this real world, in what we live right now.
Sure.
And you say, no, that's not. I say, Mr. Gatto, you're self-defeating. You know, it's a self-defeating statement. When you say something in German, that means, no, it's not. Then you say, that's nonsense.
That's
so everything that you say, so, but you're right in saying what you say. You are on the side of truth. But nevertheless, everything you say...
You're equivocating on English is the only... My answer to it is it's an equivocation on English is the only actual language and English is the only possible language. It's an equivocating on those two things. English may be the only actual language. I mean, it's logically possible I wouldn't be here right now. It's actually impossible because I am here. So you're equivocating on those two things.
Okay.